Hello and welcome to Technology and the Arts, a podcast exploring the connections between technology and art. Episode 69 of the podcast marks the fall 2013 season finale of Technology and the Arts and features lightly edited audio from a live Google Plus Hangout on Air conducted October 14, 2013. In this installment, we discuss The Oatmeal's Columbus Day comic, Hypothesis and its plan to bring open annotation to the web, New York Comic Con's hijacking of attendees' social media accounts, and the discovery of 9 long-lost Doctor Who episodes from the 1960s. All that and more is just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Friday, October 18th, 2013. Now, here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazni. Hello and welcome to the final episode of Technology and the Arts for fall 2013. My name is Brian Kelly.
And I'm John Lemazni.
And, yeah, we're getting ready to do our last, hopefully, hour or less of Technology and the Arts.
I think we're both pretty tired. I think an hour sounds about right.
Yeah, definitely. John, it's good to see you again. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. What you been up to lately?
This week was fantastic. I had a lot of fun. Earlier this week, I met with Gloucester County Library System for their staff day through Library Link New Jersey, and we had what I think was maybe one of my most fun experiences as a presenter and as a technologist talking about branding for libraries. It was from like 11 till 4, and it was just a joy to meet these people and to talk about technology in a sensible way in regards to branding. This week at Princeton Public Library, we continue with our Code Academy course. The first week was fantastic. We introduced the basics of web design and introduced some people to basic HTML and introduced them to the methodology of Code Academy. So I'm excited about continuing that on Wednesday. And later on this week, on Friday night, there is going to be a visit to the Brookdale Computer Users Group, where I'll talk about Arduino, Raspberry Pi, and the Make movement. How about you?
Well, I just wanted to, just say again, it was fun doing these this 10-episode run of Technology and the Arts again. And I know I've mentioned it before, and, we haven't talked about the details yet, but hopefully we'll come back for at least a mini-season in the spring, perhaps, to try to, keep some momentum going that we were kind of experiencing towards the tail end here. But, I just think, we'll just keep on working on getting better, and, we will be back. I thought it was funny that that It's a Thing had their season finale, so we're kind of almost in sync with them.
Yeah, I'm excited to listen to that. It's on my queue.
Yeah, it's and also, I know you brought that up, but if you're not listening to that 99% Invisible podcast yet, you really have to. The last episode was awesome. It was so awesome.
I'll have to put it on my queue.
Yeah. they talked about this mortician, or this undertaker, who in this town, and it was right when they first started getting, when they had a switchboard, and I think his name was Stowager or Stowager. I can't remember. It's Stowager is his name. Stowager or something like that. Stoger. And he wasn't getting business. He stopped getting calls. Even a close friend, a family friend, passed away, and he never got a call to handle the burial and so he found out that a competitor's wife worked at the switchboard, and she was rerouting all the calls for him to her husband and taking away all his business. And the host, Roman Mars, says, there would be like 3 options here. One would be to report the switchboard operator. 2, maybe file a civil lawsuit. Or 3, completely design, completely changed the telecommunications industry by designing a automatic switchboard. And that's what this undertaker did. He got relatives and some money people, and they designed an automatic switchboard so this wouldn't happen ever again. And I thought that it was just so well presented the way it was. It was a great podcast. So, again, It's a Thing podcast with Tom Merritt, Molly Wood, and 99% Invisible with Roman Mars. Those are probably the our two favorite podcasts that we've mentioned, I think,
on this show.
And just a couple plugs personally. My Tandem with the Random podcast will be having a Doctor Who special next month for the 50th anniversary of the show. Probably be, I think, November 18th is what I'm targeting, which is the Monday before the 23rd, which is the anniversary date.
And I know you're being modest, but I just wanted to mention that Brian got a special mention by the Committee for the Arts and Sciences of Web Design for the longest URL ever.
With random. There are longer ones.
I guess.
I've seen them.
But once you're recognized, you know.
Well, here's the thing. It's a good thing I didn't go with TWTR.com or whatever, because now Twitter is going to be trading as TWTR. So
yeah, but you could have made a mint if you had gotten TWTR and Twitter wanted it, and you could have said $1 million.
No, that was
$1 million.
No. I remember looking into that, and I saw that I was going to have potential problems with that.
Yeah.
So, and personally, again, this Saturday, October 19th, I'll be playing accordion for my friend Christian Beach when he performs his version of Yoko Ono's Silver Horse at a New Jersey Peace Action concert for peace at the Westminster Arts Center of Bloomfield College in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Does he use the word peace twice?
The New Jersey Peace Action does. It's the New Jersey Peace Action concert for peace.
Got it.
So, and to all our viewers and listeners, you won't have to hear me talk about Silver Horse ever again. Unless in the spring season, if the album ever comes out, we'll talk about it some more. But anyway, more information about the show, about the event, is available at christianbeach.net, christianbeach.net, or you can click on the link in the show notes. But John, that's all I have. What would you like to talk about in depth this week?
Okay, so I have three things I'd like to talk about. The first and foremost is that the oatmeal is at it again. And I think he's taken maybe the biggest step towards controversy that he has ever taken, although it's not especially controversial for anybody who has read Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, in which he essentially skewers Columbus as not a hero of American lore, but rather a pretty devastating figure in the tradition of imperialism and conquest. And so anyway, the Oatmeal made a comic that essentially ruins Columbus as a historical figure that can be honored. And on Columbus Day, I think that it's quite appropriate to bring attention to the fact, as he did, that Columbus raped and pillaged and destroyed a nation that existed before the nation that he quote-unquote found.
Yeah. I saw a tweet today say, hey, when a store has a Columbus Day sale, does that mean I can just go in and take whatever I want?
Exactly right. Well, I don't know that you would have seen that tweet last year, but the Oatmeal, who has always sort of taken a fairly political approach with his comics, really went over a certain kind of a line, and I love the line that he went over. So if you have not seen the Columbus Day comic, please visit theoatmeal.com/comics/Columbus_day. in order to see the interesting take that he takes on Columbus. And he also suggests a replacement for Columbus as a hero in American history. So I won't give too much about that away, but I highly suggest that if you have not seen the comic, that you go investigate it. Secondly, Brian and I have spent a few Aprils at the Trenton Computer Festival, in which I spoke a few times about technology topics. Once I spoke about weight loss, once I spoke about WordPress, and I've probably been there two other times about various open source topics. This time I put in a proposal to talk about personal branding, and it was accepted fairly quickly. Thank you to Al and Saul at Trenton Computer Festival for giving me a platform to a different audience than I typically get. And in the show notes, maybe we could put a link to the form in case anybody else has something technology related they would like to talk about in April. At this is at TCNJ. Trenton Computer Festival is over 30 years of tradition. The last one that I went to, which I think was 2 years ago, Brian was there as well, I got to meet one of my heroes because although I tend to speak about open source, the father of free software was there from MIT. And a funny little story. Wow, his name escapes me at the moment.
I know. Why am I having trouble? I was having trouble remembering a musician that I have like 30 songs of on my iPod.
It's because we're both very tired.
Yes.
But anyway, wow, I can't believe I can't remember him right now. Anyway, I went up to him at lunch and tried to just say hi, and he said, I don't think I have the time to speak to you right now. And he just like, you know, sort of like waved me away. Oh, what's his name?
Yeah, I'm trying to. See if I can.
Wow, I can't do it. Anyway, the father of the free software movement, Free Software Foundation, Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Richard Stallman.
Richard Stallman, thank you very, very much.
You know what? I knew it was Richard. I had Richard. I just couldn't get Stallman.
Yeah, I can imagine why you might have remembered Richard about Richard Stallman. But he is a controversial figure at best and an outspoken figure that really needs to have his voice heard by more people. And then finally, I wanted to talk to you about a project that is called Hypothesis, HYPOTHES.IS. And in an introduction to Hypothesis, it says that we are dedicated to bringing open annotation to the world's knowledge through the development of open source software and services. Over the next year, we'll deepen our thinking about how to bring this new capability to a diverse set of domains, including journalism, science, law, government, humanities, and education. And this is a project that's supported by the Knight Foundation. The reason why it's interesting, although I don't know very much about it, is that the promise that they have is that they will take what we have now, where essentially the printing press has evolved to the point where we all have a platform to speak now. Hypothesis is trying to bring open web standards and open technologies to allow for an open annotation of the web so that we begin to have a certain kind of peer review happen all over the web if you decide to opt in. And so while I have not seen any screenshots or any actual interface indications of what that might look like, there is great potential there to allow for us all to have some commentary about the things that we run into on the web as opposed to simply commenting. So rich possibilities there, and it wouldn't be edited by the site owner, but rather available to anybody who opted into the conversation on top of the site. So I'm excited about it. I've already offered my design services to Hypothesis, and over the next year, I think that we will be talking about Hypothesis more often. How about you, Brian? What do you want to talk about in Focus?
Well, first of all, when I saw, you know, your note in the show notes about Hypothesis and the Knight Foundation, I was a little bit of me was hoping that it was about a talking car that fights crime. Anyway, actually, I thought I picked this because I didn't see it in yours, and I wanted to make sure you were aware of it. But the Canadian government apparently is going to start forcing cable companies to offer pick and pay services, basically the Canadian way of saying a la carte. They've been recommending it for, I think, since 2011, I believe. They've been recommending all the cable providers in Canada to provide, yeah, it says, actually this is a quote from this article from the Star. Canada's broadcast regulator, the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, urged cable and satellite companies in 2011 to adopt a pick-and-pay pricing model when it unveiled new regulations aimed at preventing television broadcasters from restricting consumer choice. But the pricing model wasn't made mandatory, and Moore said it's about time for that to happen. It's not a command economy. We're not going to put in place onerous regulations. We're a government of deregulation, Moore insisted. But from time to time, we think that the best interest of consumers need to be enforced in the marketplace. So that recommendation of offering this pick and pay model is apparently becoming mandatory. And I saw some articles saying that, you know, the next step is, you know, bringing it into the United States. So we'll have to keep an eye on that to see if, you know, how it plays out in Canada and see if that has any effect on the marketplace in the United States. I mean, I can't see it happening that quickly, but it's good to know that just north of the border, you know, people have options. And I think one of the options, like, you get a basic cable package, you know, your local broadcasters, and then you can pick like five other channels that you want, and then that's your cable package.
That's what I was hoping for. I mean, I know what my five would be or my three would be right now, you know.
Right, and I when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's perfect for John. So Canada, you know, if it's, you know, the privacy concerns and cable, maybe that's your place.
Well, that there have been many reasons for me to look to Canada as a home, but now this is a more solid reason. Oh, Canada! I can do it. I would do it.
Okay, so. We'll have to – so it will no longer be having Google Plus Hangouts. We'll be having Google Plus Hangouts.
Hangouts? You know, regardless of what it's called, I don't think it would affect the quality nor the bandwidth of our show.
Right.
Hangouts?
No, yeah. Unfortunately, that's all based on us. the other thing was just – actually, I have a couple more things, but another thing was the kind of semi-controversy that took place at New York Comic Con over the weekend.
Controversy at Comic Con?
Where there was they had the badges had tags. I don't know if it was NFC or... was it RFID or something? I can't remember what the technology was, but they had tags in it, and when you got your badge, you could link your badge to a social media account, Facebook or Twitter, and all of a sudden, people were people's Twitter accounts were posting these tweets about how awesome Comic-Con was, and they're like, I didn't tweet this. And it turned out that they were, that organizers were automatically generating these tweets based on the people who linked their accounts to these badges. And the organizers said that this was an opt-in. It was a, it was all part of the whole linking process, but this apparently was not made clear to attendees, or that language didn't really exist in the sign up. But the some people were annoyed by it, and it's just it's a case of that's your account, and even if you do think Comic-Con is awesome, it's not anybody else's place to make that opinion, yours. It should be, should be yours and yours alone. So it was a little bit of a controversy, and I'll put a couple links in the show notes to stories about that. It was Mashable, I think, was the first to have it. I think that was the first place I saw it. And then I have another article from Ars Technica. So I'll put those links in the show notes. And finally, the big news.
Oh, by the way, I was thinking about buying the domain Ars Technica, A-R-S-E, and seeing if I could get some traction with that.
Ars Technica, okay.
I'm just saying.
All right. Well, it would fit for you.
It would.
Technology and the arse.
Technologyandthearse.com.
So the last thing I want to talk about was the recent discovery of film reels in a dusty storage bin in Nigeria that has resulted in the near-complete restoration of two 1960s-era Doctor Who stories, thought lost forever. The nine missing episodes discovered all feature Patrick Troughton as the Second Doctor. Five of the episodes are from The Enemy of the World, which also featured Troughton playing another antagonistic character called Salamander. And until this discovery, the BBC only had one of the six episodes of that story, so now it's finally complete. And just just a reminder, back in those days, Doctor Who was a serial format. So each week was a 25-minute episode, and, four, five, six of those made up a complete story. So that's how it worked back then. The other story that was nearly completed through the discovery was Web of Fear, and four of the five missing episodes of Web of Fear, which is the first Doctor Who story to feature the late Nicholas Courtney as fan favorite Alistair Lethbridge-Stewart. Four of those five missing episodes were found. So one is still missing. However, the BBC has used still photos and the existing audio from that missing episode to reconstruct it. So both The Enemy of the World and Web of Fear are now available on iTunes, and there's going to be a DVD release at some point down the road. I think one is coming out in November and the other one next year. I've actually downloaded Enemy of the World, and it is amazing how great it looks, considering the film was sitting covered in dust for 40-some-odd years. So Phil Morris and his company, Television International Enterprises Archives Limited, should get a lot of credit for tracking down the missing episodes. And a lot of credit should go to the BBC restoration team that has made these episodes not only watchable, but like as good as it probably looked back when it was originally broadcast, and probably even better than that. So kudos to them for a job well done. And for a show about a time traveler marking its 50th anniversary this year, I think finding nine episodes of Doctor Who from the 1960s and allowing fans to watch them again for the first time since they originally aired seems like a very appropriate celebration in a very timey-wimey way. So click on the link in the show notes to read more about the discovery of nine missing Doctor Who episodes. But that's all I have to talk about in this final episode of Technology and the Arts for fall 2013. John, you have any other Final thoughts?
I have many thoughts, but none that I will bring up at the moment.
Anyway, that concludes this episode and season of Technology and the Arts. Thank you for joining us. We should be back in the spring with at least the mini season, I hope, or we hope.
Yeah, definitely.
But we have to figure all that out still. So in the meantime, you can stay up to date on the latest happenings with the show by visiting technologyandthearts.com, liking our Facebook page, going to our Google Plus page, following us at Twitter at @tech_arts, subscribing to our YouTube channel, and searching for us via your favorite podcatcher. We hope you'll join us again next year when we return. But until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemaski. Take care.
The thoughts and views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of guests of the program. Conversely, the thoughts and views expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at technologyandthearts.com.